Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served this valley for decades. You need to have a great insurance agent. You do. You have to be with an agency that you trust, that's going to go to work for you, where customer service, it means everything. Well, that's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. They are the pros that care about you. All right. Play-by-play call of the day. In fact, I'm going to be on his show tonight, as a matter of fact, in Columbus. My good friend Paul Keels on the Ohio State Radio Network.
Samuel in the backfield with Barrett, who feeds it to Samuel. Sweeping left side, 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points. Double overtime. Curtis Samuel sweeps around the left side for the touchdown run to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory.
Great call by a great announcer, an even better guy. And if I were casting a play where I needed someone to play the role of the voice of God, Paul Keels would be one of my selections.
Now, does he have the nickname of Even Keel? Because I was listening.
Not that I know of. I always just call him Paul. Well, okay. Oh, actually, no, wait a minute. Okay.
The reason why I bring it up is I had the radio broadcast of that game on quite a bit. Leading up to yours at 3:30, and he's just so smooth. No high, no low, just right down the middle.
He is a pro, but he's in the, you know what? We've had him on the show. How many times have we had Paul on the show?
A couple times a year.
Yeah. All right. Okay. As great a guy as you'd ever want to meet. Okay. I mean, I'm talking no ego, smart, fun. I mean, fun, really fun to be around. And. Okay, nickname. I call him Great One, and he refers to me as Wise One. I know we kind of like mess around with that stuff, okay? But it was a great call. But I'm going to be on his show tonight, in Columbus. They say, hey, can we get you for a few minutes? And there's certain people where you just sit back and say, of course you can get me a few minutes, for goodness sakes. Skip Mosick and Jim Lachey and Paul and John Cooper. I don't know if Urban Meyer's on. I don't think Urban Meyer's on tonight. He was the last time I was on. But you have to be sensitive about the fact what happened today at Ohio State. I believe there were 8 or 9 people injured. So, man, that's one of the first things I'm going to do is like, hey, look, you know, our prayers are with, you know, what's really important besides where people are falling in college football playoff rankings. I mean, when some insane individual jumps a curb with the idea to deliberately injure people and then start stabbing them. I mean, completely sick, horrifying. And that campus, no campus, no society anywhere deserves that ever. And there was a police officer on hand that was able to stop the situation, and keep it from being even worse. Thank goodness. So, but I'm going to convey that obviously right away as soon as I'm on the show with them tonight. All right, 1-800-795-9565. I feel like what has happened with Penn State is that nationally people are completely caught off guard by this. They don't know what to do with it. And when you don't know what to do with it, you come up with various excuses as to why something shouldn't happen. Well, no, you know, this and this and this and this. But again, it's up to the College Football Playoff Committee needs to, I think, open the door, not now, but in the off season, to do a mock to let everyone know, what is your process on a weekly basis as how you determine 1 through 25? And let the media see how they do it. Let them participate in it, which is what the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee does in February with members of the media. They bring them in and say, look, okay, participate. You find out how difficult it is and everything that they weigh and how they come up with it. They don't just sit there with a dartboard and go, okay, that looks good. Yeah. Look, the dart landed on Washington. I feel great. We'll tell everybody that's the top four. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Washington. Great. Okay. Now we'll find out tomorrow night. I just think that nationally, people don't know what to do with Penn State. They just don't. I think they have a better handle as to what to do with Wisconsin, because Wisconsin, obviously, you know, the win over LSU to begin the season at Lambeau has carried with it tremendous cachet during the year. And I think that's allowed them to get more recognition because they came out of the gate and did something early out of the gate that was impressive. Penn State was not impressive out of the gate, but they are impressive now. And I don't think anybody knows what to do with them. That's why I think there's been a lot of excuses as to why they shouldn't be considered, why they're really not in it, you know, that this game was a fluke and that one game was a fluke. But there's a bottom line to this. Penn State has won 8 in a row. They're going for their 9th straight win. Wisconsin's won 6 in a row. Ohio State's won 5 in a row. Iowa's won 4 in a row. Michigan has lost 2 of its last 3 games. Okay. Hey, all I did was just state facts. Name anything in that last statement that's incorrect, factually incorrect. Has Michigan lost 2 of their last 3 games? Yes. Okay. Not exactly steamrolling home, are they? Both were on the road, but then again, they played 8 home games, so they've had a cocoon to play with. They certainly have great wins. Michigan has awesome wins. Wins over Penn State, Colorado, and Wisconsin. Now, what did all 3 of those games have in common? All 3 games were played in Ann Arbor. They didn't play anybody on the road. Okay. And this was a year where they had their 5 Big Ten games at home, and their 3 non-conference games were all at home. That's how they ended up with 8. So this wasn't the year where they rotated out where it's 4 at home and 5 on the road in the conference. They had their 5 Big Ten games at home, just like Penn State did, as a matter of fact. The difference was Penn State played one of its non-conference games away. That was obviously the Pitt game. So here we are on November 28th having this conversation. And as I stated in the opening half hour, last week we heard repeatedly, and I agree with the assessment, that Michigan State is better than its record. And they are. Look, they're a better football team than 3-9. But what people didn't talk about, and this is when it was brought up to me on the show I did in Atlanta early Saturday afternoon, when it was brought up, I said, look, I agree with you. Michigan State is absolutely better than its record. I said, but guess what? I said, nobody's talking about this. And the host said, what? I said, Penn State is its record. I said, they're good. I said, they're 9-2. I said, they are a 9-2 football team, which is now a 10-2 football team. This game on Saturday night is going to be a really tough, hard-fought 4-quarter game. Wisconsin is very, very good. Now, we don't know if Alex Hornibrook can play in the game. He's in concussion protocol right now. Bart Houston has played a lot of football this year for them. Corey Clements, a very good running back. Ogundere, the backup running back, not only a good runner, but he's a very good receiver out of the backfield. Jazz Peavy is to Wisconsin what R.J. Shelton is to Michigan State. They try to get him the ball 5 to 10 times a game, whether it's in the running game or the passing game. Here's a guy that has 17 rushes on the year to go with his 39 receptions. I feel Fumagalli, the tight end, is very good. They don't get a lot of yards after the catch. And then defensively, what you'll notice is Wisconsin is never out of position defensively. Beagle's really good. T.J. Watt is very good. 13 tackles for losses, 10 sacks. You have to contain him. And then the secondary, they have 21 interceptions this year. Their four starting secondary players have 16 of them. Musso has five, Shelton has four, and the other two have four and three, respectively. They're just very, very good. Wisconsin is rarely out of position defensively. You may beat them on a play here and there. You may beat them on a series of plays, but they're rarely out of position. And they control the clock. 85 to 90% of the Penn State scoring drives this year have been less than 4 minutes. Half of the Wisconsin scoring drives this year have been less than 4 minutes. They want to control the game and control the clock. Of their 12 games, 10 of the 12, they've had better than 30 minutes in time of possession. Playing with the lead in this game is very important. If Penn State can get to the lead and force Wisconsin to try and get back in the game throwing the football, advantage Penn State. If Wisconsin gets to the lead and their ground and pound is working, advantage Wisconsin, and it makes life tougher for Penn State because they'll eat yards, eat clock, and keep Penn State's offense off the field. But if Penn State can get to the lead and get Wisconsin into a zone it's uncomfortable in, and that's throwing the ball, then advantage Penn State. I think Penn State has an advantage in the kicking game. That could be big, especially indoors. Yeah, there'll be no issue with you'll have no issue with what to wear. You'll wear a heavy coat going in. It's going to be in the upper 30s in Indianapolis. Inside, you can kick back and relax. 72, comfortable. Kind of like Sean's home every night. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855. Check us out online at purdyinsurance.com or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Take a moment to breathe deeply. Clear your mind and consider your surroundings. Notice the sights and sounds, the scents and textures, every sensation. Are you where you want to be? You can redirect your path at any time. After all, life isn't scripted. It's not about winning the race. It's a journey towards your personal best. And that is the ultimate destination. And the all-new 2017 Lincoln Continental is the vehicle to take you there. You deserve this. Nestle into the serene cabin and surround yourself with the reassuring strength of its forms. From its intuitive ease of the 30-way front seat controls to the exceptional collection of amenities, Continental invites everyone to experience the journey in an elegant new way. Sunbury Motors Lincoln will be there for you and your Lincoln whenever, wherever you need it. Stop in today and experience this impressive vehicle for yourself at Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Purchase any new Lincoln in the month of November and receive one complete detail each year for the next 4 years. Sunbury Motors Lincoln, making American luxury affordable. Check out our inventory at sunburylincoln.com.
Telling Sean during the break the number of people that have come up to you in the last few days that have talked about listening to the show on an everyday basis and have had very kind comments has been off the charts. And for all of you who have come up to me and said something, thanks so much. I greatly appreciate that very, very much.
We love it, love it, love it. And if you can't listen live, you can always go to stevejonesshow.com, click podcast, and do some binge listening while you put up the Christmas tree or while you're hanging out at hunting camp, whichever's convenient for you.
Oh, that's right. This is the first day of deer season. Now, the suit is out, right?
The suit is in.
Oh, no, he's not out there in the woods.
He is not out in the woods. Well, with, you know, having to be in the garage and have the, you know, the little ticker procedure about a month ago, his, I guess his time off must have got exhausted. So, yeah, he is here now. Now, Mr. Lawrence, Mark Lawrence, will be taking off tomorrow for the rest of the week. So Jennifer Wakeman will take care of Sunrise tomorrow morning and the rest of the week while Mark's out. So, yeah, Mark will, so it's all on Mr. Lawrence to treat us to some venison bologna early next month. So we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm, yes. Well, I almost went and bought a license thinking the suit was going to be in the woods. That's cruel.
Yeah, kind of foggy this morning after 7 o'clock, so probably challenging for the hunters out there. They probably would have wanted a clear morning with some snowpack, but hey, hopefully for all the hunters listening, they had a safe one and...
Yeah, I hope they had a great time today.
Yep, good luck.
I hope they had a great time. My father would go out and he would hunt. I don't think my father ever fired the gun unless it was at a tree or a target. So I really don't think he did. but he would go out and I was like, okay, great. You know, I mean, that's. And he enjoyed it. A friend of mine, did I ever tell you this story about a friend of mine go hunting with his father all the time? Did I tell you that?
No, did not.
Okay. Well, good. I can waste your time now and tell it. fabulous.
Yeah, if we got a few minutes before Seth Greenberg calls, it's all good.
Yeah. He and his father always went out the first Monday after Thanksgiving. And the... So the whatever they would do is that if one of them were able to get a buck, the son would drag the buck out of the woods and bring it back to the car. Okay. So, I don't know, about 7 or 8 years ago, the two of them were out there. And one of the two, I don't know which one, got one. So now comes time to drag the buck back to the car. So he's dragging, but gets about maybe a little bit more than halfway back to the car, and he puts the deer down. He says, yeah, just give me a second, Dad. I just need a second here. The father looks at him and says, what's wrong with you? Come on, you've always done that with so much ease over the years. He says, you're all right? He goes, Dad, I'm 52. And the father looked at him, and all of a sudden, like, the light came on and went, oh, my goodness. He's not 22 or 32 anymore. He is 52. It was one of those, like, enlightening moments. Like, oh, wait a minute. My little boy is not my little boy. He's a 52-year-old man. He does need to put it down and take a break. Oh. So. That happens in life. That happens in life. Looking at all the Wisconsin blitzes here. Very interesting. Where they come from, which, you know, they bring a field 100% of the time, where in this look, it's from the boundary 100% of the time in that look. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I get all sorts of fun stuff to look at. I do. I really do. Like, really, like, intricate stuff. Great stuff. Oh, yeah. Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, I'll use that later.
I guess it's only Monday.
Well, I had to take maybe 6 hours yesterday to kind of put everything together in Wisconsin. I mean, it took a while. The reason it took a while is that, you know, I do all that advanced work in, you know, late April, all of May, and then, if need be, the first week of June. So I'll put together 41 different teams, 12 football and... than whatever I need basketball-wise, 29, depending on tournaments.
Well, this is definitely no lie, because you and I were texting back and forth, you know, getting some prep ready for this week's show, and I heard from you yesterday morning, wasn't even 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You did not wake me up. I was having some coffee, so it was all good.
Good. And So literally with Wisconsin, they haven't played him since 2013. Now, a few of the guys are there, like Sojourn Sheldon, Leo Musso, Vince Beagle, Corey Clement. They were all played against Penn State in 2013, but they were all freshmen at the time or redshirt freshmen at the time. They're all seniors now. But like everything else, I had to start from scratch. Number, name, height, weight, class, hometown. So, I mean, I'd do the whole thing from scratch. Yeah, which is perfectly fine. It was an enjoyable exercise, but it's just longer than usual because I didn't have any advance on them. So, but it's done. I really, to be honest, now I'm into the film breakdown stage of it. I'm going to watch the Minnesota game. Then I'm going to watch the Northwestern game. You're going to ask, why can I watch Northwestern? Northwestern is a team that I have looked at. Now, I've already seen them on tape for Iowa because I needed that before Penn State played. I already saw them against Ohio State. So, again, that's because right before Penn State played Ohio State. But I've looked at Northwestern several times this year because I want to look at a team that stylistically, maybe not talent-wise, but they run the spread offense. So how does Wisconsin react to the spread offense? So I really use Northwestern as a gauge in several of the opponents that Penn State's played this year. So I'm going to look at more of them. And I started looking at Minnesota, but I am going to have to take a long, hard look at Northwestern as well, because they've actually been a great gauge for me. And Vince Beagle and TJ Watt, guess what? On Pro Football Focus, guess where they grade out? Really high. There's a shot. There's a shocker. So.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I always had tremendous respect for him as a coach. I have great respect for him now as an analyst and in the studio. That's Seth Greenberg. Coach, welcome. It's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well today. We're at a point where obviously college football at the moment is dominating the landscape for obvious reasons. They're at the end of their season. I think college basketball does a great job of scheduling certain things, like the ACC Big Ten Challenge as an example. Is there anything else college basketball can do that can break away a little bit, or does it really have to settle where it is, Seth?
I think it's really difficult. I mean, the narrative of sporting world right now is, you know, the NFL playoff runs and the college football championship and playoffs, especially this coming week. But we're doing what we can do right now. Here's what we're doing. We're speeding up the game. The game is easier to watch. We're creating terrific non-conference intersectional matchups in with Feast Week, with the ACC Big Ten Challenge, with the Armed Forces Classic. With these made-for-television games like UCLA and Kentucky, and later on we've got Kentucky and Kansas in the SEC Big 12. We've got more good teams, which is really important. And we've got the traditional teams, which is as important. And you say, well, why is that? You know why? Because they move the needle. Whether we want to admit it or not, when Kentucky and North Carolina and Duke and Kansas and UCLA and those people are good, it's good for our game. Do we need others to be good? Sure we do. Do we need upsets? Sure we do. And I think this year, especially, we've got a good mixture of teams with terrific freshmen. Because let's face it, this time of the year, November, December, what is the narrative in college basketball? It's the freshmen. But we have these really good teams that have upperclassmen like Villanova, you know, like North Carolina, you know, like Oregon. Like, as we go across the board, you've got a lot of senior upper class oriented teams, and then we've got obviously the Dukes and the Kentuckys and people like that are having, you know, tremendous impacts of their freshman classes. So I think we're doing a good job with it. I think we've just gotta figure out a way to make each game a little bit more important. You know, we play so many games and so many are on TV that we lose the sex appeal at times. But our game's in pretty good shape right now.
I agree. It's in really good shape. I just saw Duke twice in person because Penn State was in the Mohegan Sun Classic, the Hall of Fame Classic. And at this point, outside of Frank Jackson, the freshmen aren't playing for Duke right now. But they're still really good. And they sold it out. I mean, what, you know, that should be, I think, a statement unto itself about the big-name teams and where the game is right now.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere they go. I mean, they go to Madison Square Garden. That's like basically Cameron North. I mean, they go to the Meadowlands. Yeah. It's Cameron North. I mean, look, they're a brand. You don't have to be a Duke grad to be a Duke fan. I mean, they're a brand. They're, in a lot of ways, they're Notre Dame of football. Kentucky's very similar, except Kentucky's fans are more the Big Blue Nation, and they just are so passionate, where Duke is more, their fans are of a national nature. But look, they're playing. Their backcourt is athletic and smart. They've got a guy that might be the national player of the year still playing for them. But when they get those three dudes back, if they get all three of them back, now you've got your front court. Jason Tatum is a genetic freak. I mean, he can play in a baseline, he can shoot it, he can bounce it. Marquise Bolden is a big, huge body that can finish around the basket.
And I believe we lost him there for a second.
Yeah, we'll see if we can call him back.
Yeah, we'll call him right back, get him back on the line if we can. We lost him for a second. He's on his cell phone at the moment. So once we get him back, I'll ask a follow-up question, because one of the follow-up questions I want to discuss with him will be about the one and done. Now, obviously, the NBA Players Association has complete control over this because they're going to have to sit down and negotiate again next year when the basic agreement runs out. And when the basic agreement does run out, I'm sure that it's going to be discussed about the NBA wanting to go to 2 years and 20, as opposed to the 1 year and 19 years of age you have to be now. And so that I wanted to ask him about, you know, whether that's been a plus or a minus for the college game, even though the college game has no control over it. The college game literally has no control over that part right now. The NBA and the NBA Players Association have control over that right now. So as soon as we get him back, that'll be one of the topics I'll ask him about. Then I'm also going to want to ask him about making, you know, he's made such a great transition to TV. He was always a great interview and talker to begin with.
Yep, got him back.
There we go. Coach, great to have you back. Appreciate the patience.
Right.
Thank you. I was going to ask you, mentioned the Duke freshman. Of course, we know about Kentucky. The NBA and the Players Association control all of this. It is not a college basketball edict. It's the NBA and about 19 years of one year in college. Is that has it hurt or helped the game of college basketball in an indirect way?
Yeah, I'll tell you where it's hurt our game. Look, back in the day, people could name every guy that starts on every team.
That's right.
That's just the way it was. Today, you can't do that. You can't do that because those great players are only there for 7 months. Now there are aberrations to that. I mean, there are teams that have, like, you know, you can think of Josh Hart, you can think of Chris Jenkins, you can think of, you know players, you know, Denzel Valentine, Buddy Hield. More guys might be better off sticking around, to be honest. But I mean, that's the way it is right now. It's a shame that it is, but NBA's controlling it. If the NBA let guys come out of high school, I think we have more guys that stuck around. Look, go out of high school, stay 2 years.
Right.
Sudden, you know what? We would have a better familiarity with you know, the players, and there would be a greater connection between the fan and the player. But it is what it is. It's out of our control, and
we've just got to
enjoy the game we have.
Exactly. I also think it would make the NBA a more mature league, but that's a different topic. One final question, because I promised we'd only keep you a few minutes, and that's this. All those years coaching, you're always a great interview, so talking and being in front of microphones was no big deal to you. What's it been like now making the transition to analyst, studio, and occasionally being at games and being a game analyst?
you know, it's been different. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I mean, it's, I've been very fortunate. I don't take the opportunity that I've been given for granted. It's not given to everyone. And, I work at it like I was still coaching. And I'm appreciative of the opportunity. And, you know, I basically use my relationships to do what I do. And I'm fortunate that in a 36-year career, I have a lot of good friends that have been very good to me since I've been in this side. But it's different. You know, you miss the relationships. You miss the highs of coaching. You can taste your food after games, actually, and sleep at night. But but I've been very, very fortunate and appreciative. You know, I look myself still as a coach. I'm a coach working in the media, not a journalist. I wouldn't want to insult you guys that are real journalists, to be honest with you.
Well, I appreciate the great work you do, and for this reason. And I've always, to my broadcast partners, Dick Girardi and Jack Hamm on basketball and football, I've always said this about them. If you've learned more about the game after listening to them, I feel they've done their job. Every time I hear you, I feel like I learned more about the game. So I appreciate the time you gave us very much.
Well, thank you very much. That's very nice, kind words. Appreciate it, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach. Have a good one. Seth Greenberg joining us. Great to hear him on the other end today. Had a few minutes with him today. And again, he's one of those guys that, you know, you sit down, I feel Jay Billis is the same way. When Jay Billis is done with a game, and, you know, look, he may rub some people the wrong way opinion-wise, but, you know, it's his job of being in the opinion business. But I feel when the game is over, when Seth Greenberg is done talking, I feel like I've learned more about the game. When I hear Jay Billis, I feel like I've learned more about the game. You know, just like I feel about with Jack Hamm and Dick Girardi, I feel when the game is over, I feel like I've learned more about the game. And to me, that's the mark of what a really good analyst is. Did I learn more about the game by listening to them? Now, I work with two of the very best. Seth Greenberg and Jay Billis are two of those guys. And in the football area, Todd Blackledge, Kirk Herbstreit, those are two guys, Joel Klatt. I feel like I learned more about the game listening to them when the game's over with. And to me, that's always been my standard for a really great analyst. You may have a different standard, but that's mine. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, the Big Ten has announced that they have publicly reprimanded head coach Jim Harbaugh, and there will be an institutional fine of $10,000 as a result of the violation, which I think everybody expected was going to happen. So it's under the category of whatever. That's how I look at it. Yeah, whatever. Fine. You get fined. I look at the passenger. Obviously, the only time I saw, with one exception, the fourth down play with Barrett had to get to the 15-yard line. It turned out we were in a long commercial break in our game. So when they went for it, we were looking at it. And
so was there anyone in your group that thought that he did not get the first down?
Not a single person. Every single person thought he got it. I mean, Jack did. Then about, they were looking and hemming and hawing or whatever. But then, you know, Jack and I turned around. You know, there was 30 seconds to go before we had to go back on. So we turned back around to our game and didn't get into it because to us it was pretty obvious that he made it. So I felt the entire time, and I understand the passion of a coach fighting for his team and for his players. That part I understand. I give him the benefit of the doubt for that. But he was not right about that. Okay, that's one where I thought, to be honest with you, was a relatively easy call by the officials. For one thing, because they started on the 25, he just needs to get to the stripe, which really makes it exponentially easier for the officials to make a call on that as to where the ball is, because they've got a full stripe down the field that tells them where is the ball. Well, the ball got to the 15, and I thought it was actually a relatively easy no-brainer call. So I didn't think he was right about that. Now, the interference calls, yeah. I can see where he has an argument about that. But here's the problem he has. Okay? The officials did not throw an interception that was run back for a touchdown. The officials did not fumble the ball on the one-yard line. The officials did not have another turnover that led to an Ohio State touchdown. The officials didn't do all that. His team did that. I felt like when I was watching, which wasn't long, that Michigan had the better of the play. The problem was they made so many mistakes that the better of the play didn't matter because they gave up their advantage of having the better in the play by making big mistakes. The problem with his team is that they made big mistakes in that game. And that's why they ended up losing the game, because of the big mistakes they made. The officials didn't make those mistakes. His team made those mistakes. And as expected, he did get fined and whatever. That's, you know, I think everybody expected that. But something, as I pointed out earlier, it was this. I mean, I don't think people know what to make of or what to do with Penn State. Years ago, and I told the story earlier, but I'll tell the story again. I was talking with Billy Packer, and I asked Billy Packer, I said, you know, how do you get ready for the NCAA tournament when there's just so, you know, so many teams out there? I mean, how do you go through a season and kind of figure out what the landscape is? And he said, look, he said, I pick 15 to 20 teams. I really lock in on them, and I really follow them. The ones that I think have the best shot of advancing. There's a surprise team. Okay, there's a surprise team, and then, you know, I'll deal with that when it happens. So basically what he told me. And it made complete sense in the enormity of what he has to look at. And I think that what has happened in college football is that people looked at early in the season, looked at a certain grouping of teams. That grouping at the time included Notre Dame, Michigan State. Remember, early in the season, they were both ranked up in the top 10, top 5. Well, Notre Dame fell like a rock. Michigan State fell like a rock. Clemson was always there, so everybody's had a good handle on Clemson. Alabama, obviously. Ohio State's always been there, so people had a good handle on them. Michigan's always been there. They've always had a handle on them. Seeing Washington rise, I think, is something that people have had a handle on, because they kept winning each week, so they were in the mix. Remember, a lot of people were hot early on UCLA. Felt like a rock. Rosen got hurt, felt like a rock. So certain teams that were ranked high, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Michigan State, Notre Dame, UCLA, were all on the radar, and I'm sure most of the analysts had a really in-depth knowledge of all of them because they were in that pool. Well, in the opening month, Penn State wasn't in the pool. They weren't even thought of. And now you have a group of individuals, through no fault of their own, but a group of individuals that are now trying to play catch-up, and they don't really know how good Penn State is. And I think that's the biggest issue here, is that Penn State has caught so many people off guard, they don't know what to make of them, and they don't actually know how good they are. And I can tell you, when watching them, Penn State is really good. I mean, really good. They're deep, they're athletic, and they have guts. And what's happened is that the maturity of a football team that's grown up, because they're a little bit older now, in combination with confidence, has made a big difference. And I think that has been, above all, I mean, that's what I've looked at. James Franklin and his staff have done a great job of approach. I can tell you right now, this is not a team that is happy to be there. This is a business-like team. They've been all business. This is not one of those, hey, this is great, we're playing the championship game, wow, hey, okay, well, let's go play, right? They're not in the I'm happy to be there mode. They're in the all business, we're here to win it mode. That's what I've noticed right away.
One thing I go back to is when we had Jack Hamm on before the opening game with Kent State.
to watch on, to one thing to look at, the defensive line. Yes, three guys left to go to the pros, but we even had Kevin Gibbons in the highlight at the start of the show. Just how impressive has the defensive line been?
And that's been a big plus, the way they've moved forward on the defensive line. It's made a big difference. One of the questions I asked Brandon Bell in the postgame show, I said, what did those guys up front mean? He goes, the Wild Dogs. And that's been terrific to see the way that, and they've been fresh. I think what really helps, especially you get into a game like this, is that getting Buchholz back, and Buchholz only missed the Rutgers game, that's all, but they got him back and he's full go. That now gives Brent Pry and Sean Spencer the option of the four defensive end look. Sharif Miller, whatever defensive end you want on the outside, whether it's Sharif Miller or Torrance Brown or Schwann or Sickles, in combination with Givens and Buchholz playing the tackle spot. In this game against Wisconsin, okay, that rush group on third and obvious against whether it's Houston or Hornibrook is going to be really important because neither one of them reacts tremendously well under pressure. I've seen the numbers. Their pass percentages go way down with each one of them when they're pressured, way down. And that four defensive end look, which is now an option for them and a reliable option, is a big plus for them. Big plus. But I think above all, what we're seeing here is that I don't think people know what to make of this team. Thus, they're having trouble getting a handle on how good they are. I mean, look, this is a football team that beat Temple, which is in the American Championship game, beat Minnesota, which is very good, beat bowl-bound Maryland, beat second-ranked Ohio State, okay, beat Iowa, which has now won four in a row, beat bowl-bound Indiana. I mean, again, Penn State's won eight in a row, Wisconsin's won six in a row, Ohio State's won five in a row, Iowa's won four in a row, Michigan's lost two of its last three. You tell me who's trending up.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.